searching for growth in Europe.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson with a global perspective on business and economics. The Eurozone debt crisis may have lost some of the drama we've seen in recent years, but new figures out this morning show it is far from over. German companies, which have been the backbone of Europe's economy, are showing signs of trouble. From the Marketplace European desk, Stephen Beard reports.
Linked together by a common currency, the members of the Eurozone are all roped together like climbers scaling a cliff face. If one or more loses their footing, all could come crashing down. And that's the threat contained in the latest Purchasing Managers survey out today. It shows the biggest economy, Germany, stumbling. German private sector output shrank in April. Things are picking up in France, but Germany is likely to drag everyone down. Speaking to Marketplace, French Finance Minister Pierre Moscovici blamed the Eurozone for his country's economic malaise.
The difficulty is that the Eurozone is going to have the second year of a recession. It's very difficult for a country like France to grow when its own environment is weak.
Today's survey doesn't offer much hope of improvement. Analysts say it shows the downturn in Europe is likely to intensify. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
So what can be done to increase growth in Europe, or the United States for that matter? Well, Peter Henry thinks the answer lies in third world economies. He's the dean of NYU's Stern School of Business, and his new book is called Turnaround, Third World Lessons for First World Growth. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
Great to have you. So first of all, what is the biggest lesson from the third world for the first world?
I think the biggest lesson right now for the first world is that discipline in the context of economic policy does not mean fiscal austerity. Right now, the world economy is in a really critical place. We've got very slow growth in the United States, recession in Europe, and the emerging economies are growing. Emerging economies are growing because they're doing the things that we taught them to do over the last two or three decades. During the boom years from 2002 to 2007, countries like Chile saved so that when the global recession hit, Chile was able to institute a $4 billion tax cut package to stimulate the economy. Take the United States. We in 2001, specifically, we had a $236 billion budget surplus that we returned in the form of tax cuts. And therefore, when we hit hard times, we didn't have anything.
But isn't it a different situation? I mean, we have long-term obligations. We have more debt right now. Yes, we didn't save for a rainy day, as you say we should have, but we also have a lot more things to pay for. We've got a bigger social safety net.
Exactly. So the critical thing is discipline means focus on the future. And focus on the future means, yes, we have to deal with long-term entitlement issues, for instance, but we don't have to do so in a drastic way, slashing spending today. We've got to find a gradual way to deal with our long-term issues.
Well, backing away from the specifics there, are you saying simply that third world countries think long-term and we're thinking short-term?
Exactly. And this is a turnaround from where we were three decades ago. In 1985, James Baker, then Secretary of the Treasury under Ronald Reagan, went to Seoul, South Korea, and made a big speech as to what third world countries needed to do to turn themselves around. And he basically said they need to think long term. They're thinking too short term. And today, it's the first world that's thinking short term. And third world countries, now emerging markets, the Brazils, the Mexicos, the Chiles of the world that are thinking, and Turkey, that are thinking longer term.
Now, you have said that we are all winners or we are all losers, which brings up a really interesting point that maybe it doesn't matter what individual countries do. It's a global economy. We're all going to bring each other up or down.
We make the mistake when we think about the prosperity of the emerging economies that somehow prosperity is a zero-sum game, that emerging economies are on the rise to our detriment, and nothing could be further from the truth. As emerging economies grow, they develop a stronger middle class that demands our exports that comes to the United States and other developed countries to engage in tourism. It's good for all of us. And so the key question is, do we have the humility to look beyond our shores and to look at emerging economies that are essentially prospering from the economic houses that we taught them how to build? And do we have the humility to take those lessons back home and begin to start living up to our potential again?
Peter Henry, dean at the NYU Stern School of Business and author of Turnaround, Third World Lessons for First World Growth. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed in global trading this morning. Down 1% in Hong Kong, up 0.8% right now in London. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow added 19 points to close at 14,567.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
We'll get earnings today from DeVry. The for-profit college industry has been hit with falling enrollment and a steady stream of bad PR. DeVry itself is under investigation in two states for its marketing practices. From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR, Amy Scott reports.
Pretty much all the for-profit colleges are having trouble recruiting students, as more of them question taking on a lot of debt in an uncertain economy. But Corey Greendale at First Analysis says DeVry has a better reputation with employers than many of its competitors, and enrollment has started to improve.
We expect not necessarily that they're going to be blowing the doors off, but that they'll continue that trend of kind of gradually working their way back.
Many elite universities have been moving into online education, traditionally the turf of for-profit colleges. Schools like Stanford and MIT are offering what are known as massive open online courses, or MOOCs, for free. Kevin Kinzer with SUNY Albany says most of them don't offer credit yet.
If MOOCs really do take off, the ability of the for-profit sector to continue to use distance education to drive their profits, I think, is going to be limited.
And last week, the Obama administration said it will try again to write rules that hold career colleges accountable for student success. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
And finally, the overworked staff of the Boston Globe got a little gift from their friends at the Chicago Tribune, dozens of pizzas. The Tribune said in a note, quote, "We can't buy you lost sleep, so at least let us pick up lunch." In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.